Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Tuesday, I Used to Be Funny, and Green Border.
I'd like to talk about three films which are pretty different from each other today, although two of them do deal with girls who are in their middle teens. So that's one thing that a couple of them have in common. And then the third one is very different altogether. They're two of them. Are pretty good movies. The third I didn't like so much. I'll get to that in a moment. I'd like to start off talking about Tuesday, which is a movie where Tuesday is not a day of the week. It is the name of the main character. This is the first movie from the writer-director Dana Onyunis-Pusic, and I think it's a really promising film. A lot of people probably won't like it very much because it's very strange in certain respects, but I just thought it's a real active imagination, and I respect that a great deal. So here is what the movie is about. Tuesday is a 15-year-old girl, and she is very, very ill. In fact, she's apparently dying. She has a fatal disease. Her mother, Zora, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who I mainly love from the wonderful TV series Veep, but she's done a lot of other things as well. The mother of Tuesday, Zora, is a very irresponsible woman. She doesn't appear to work. She lies to her daughter about that so that it will appear that she is going to work. But mainly she seems to be trying to avoid the company of her 15-year-old daughter who has this fatal illness. And Zora really has absolutely no idea how to deal with that. So her main strategy seems to be to avoid what's going on here. Then, and this is when the movie takes its very big twist very early on, another main character turns out to be death. Yep, death. In this case, death is not the traditional grim reaper, you know, with the black cowl and holding a scythe and so forth. In this movie, death takes the form of a bird. It's a parrot, apparently, some sort of parrot-like bird, which can become very large or very, very small, can change its shape, can change its size, but it is definitely death and it can talk. And it shows up to take Tuesday away because Tuesday's time to die has finally come. So, my gosh, what an unusual premise, I think, for a movie. This movie is obviously a fantasy, but it's not just having fun with this. This is serious stuff, and the movie treats it seriously. So, both 15-year-old Tuesday and her irresponsible mother, Zora, get involved with this talking parrot, which turns out to be death. And various things transpire. The movie has a lot of twists and turns along the way. Somewhere around the middle of it, Zora actually manages to get rid of the figure of death, the talking bird, for a while, in a means that I found unpersuasive and sort of silly. That's the one flaw in the movie, I think. But sure enough, the talking bird eventually comes back and the movie transpires, moves its way to its final end. So again, this is a movie which in some respects seems to be very whimsical, even almost silly. We have here this talking bird, which is apparently meant to be death, and yet it couldn't be dealing with a more serious topic, which is death, both the death of Tuesday, who is a very, very nice girl, and it's really easy to sort of just like her a very, very great deal. But it's also dealing with this really profound and troubling topic of death itself. Now, somewhere in the last part of the movie, and I don't want to give too many spoilers here. In fact, I don't really want to give any spoilers. But something happens that puts the bird out of commission for a while. Death is not operating for a while. And now we have the movie's probably most radical kind of idea, which is what would happen if there were no death? Even though we've been spending a lot of time with death dealing with 15-year-old Tuesday and with her mother, there's all these other people in the world who have all kinds of conditions, accidents, illnesses, tragedies of various kinds, where they are meant to die, and yet they can't die. And this apparently goes for animals as well as humans. So So this is where the movie gets very extravagant. What would it be like if there were no death? What about all the people who not only it's their time to die, but who need to die because they are in such horrible, terrible circumstances? What would happen if they couldn't die? So the movie also gets into that territory for a while. It becomes a sort of an apocalyptic kind of a fantasy or even thriller. So it's an odd movie. It's a strange movie. It deals with tremendously important topics in ways that are themselves almost whimsical. And yet the movie held me in almost all of its respects. Again, I thought that the part where they get rid of the bird for a while was sort of ridiculous. But it's a film that really has the courage of its convictions. It takes an outlandish premise, takes that premise very seriously, deals with incredibly serious topics via that premise. And for me, at least, it held me almost all the way. It's a movie I really recommend that people see. It's the kind of movie that, to use a real cliche, it makes you think. But it's also just a really intriguing fantasy. And The Bird is, by the way, very well done. It looks real, it acts real, and I believed it. Sometimes you can't exactly understand all the words that it's saying because it talks in one of these movie-type sort of monster voices. But it's not a monster. In a way, it's a creature we all need in the world. And, well, I found Tuesday to be a really fascinating fantasy, and I just really do recommend it. The second movie I want to talk about, which is another sort of dramedy, is the one of these three films I'm talking about today that I like the least. I Used to Be Funny. Well, I didn't find the movie funny, and I didn't find it very dramatic either. It just didn't quite work for me, that's all. The main character is a stand-up comedian named Samantha, known to one and all as Sam. And at one point, because she's a stand-up comedian and they don't always reliably earn a good living, she takes a job as nanny. She's basically supposed to be an au pair, but she's basically a nanny for a girl who is about 14 years old, whose name is Brooke. So Sam, the stand-up comedian, is making some money as the babysitter for Brooke and also as the au pair in the household. Brooke's mother is very, very ill. We never even see her in the movie, and she dies fairly early in the film. Brooke also has a father named Cameron, who at first is sort of a standoffish guy, and we don't really know what to make of him. And in fact, he doesn't seem to have much interaction with either his daughter or with Sam, the au pair, the nanny. But he turns out, in the end, last part of the movie, to be an extremely important figure. So we occasionally see Sam doing her stand-up act in the nightclub where she's working. It's not really a nightclub, it's a comedy club. And we also see her interacting with her two roommates, her two gay roommates, a woman and a man. And they seem to be nice, jolly sort of people. And so we have these different storylines going on. There's Sam with her roommates, there's Sam with her job as the nanny for Brooke. However, we discover very early in the film that Brooke is a very troubled teenager. She's troubled partly because her mother has just died, and she's troubled also because she's a teenager, and she's going through a lot of changes in life that she doesn't really understand. And Sam does her best to cope with these things, and she and her young teenage ward really get along very well. But it turns out that more is going on in here that meets the eye. The movie is a little bit scrambled in its timeline, so sometimes we're jumping a little bit into the future, and it turns out that Brooke and Sam get into a real conflict with each other, and Brooke runs away. And in fact, that's really the situation at the beginning of the film. Brooke has run away. The police are looking for her. Everybody's looking for her. Sam is looking for her, but can't really do anything except tell the police that she saw Brooke when Brooke came by to break a window in Sam's the place where Sam lives. So the movie goes on like that. Ultimately, it turns out to turn on something which is, it's a very serious thing and it's a very important thing, but it's the kind of thing the movie just doesn't really know how to deal with, which is the fact that it turns out that there was a real sort of a Me Too situation involving Sam and Brooke's father, Cameron. So all of these things are what the movie is about. It ultimately resolves itself by getting into this Me Too situation, and there's a courtroom scene and this and that. And by this time, I thought the movie was just trying to squeeze in much more narrative material than it was even really able to deal with. It's a Canadian movie. It takes place mostly in Toronto, although it moves a little bit at the end to Niagara Falls. And I just found it very uneven. Some people really love Rachel Sennett's performance as Sam and the comedian, I wasn't very impressed by it. I preferred, actually, Olga Petza, who plays Brooke. They're very interesting. And the people who play the roommates, I thought they were pretty good. And there's also an ex-boyfriend of Sam's who shows up, a guy named Noah, nicely played by Ennis Esmer. So there's some good characters. There's some good acting. But overall, I just didn't feel that the movie really just knew how to handle the amount of narrative material, some of which is very serious, some of which is more whimsical, that it tries to take on. So I can't really recommend I Used to Be Funny. I didn't find that it was funny, and I didn't find that it was dramatic. But, I mean, it's a nice try. So if you want to see a movie about a stand-up comedian moonlighting as a nanny, then it might be the movie for you. Our third movie today is really excellent. It was made by the wonderful Polish filmmaker Agnieszka Holland. She is now in her middle 70s. And this movie has such a youthful energy to it that, well, Agnieszka, who I met and interviewed many years ago, has been a wonderful filmmaker for decades and decades. Not all of her movies are good. This is one of the very good ones. And I have to say, again, she has just a youthful energy, just will not quit, because this is a movie which is a very physical production, and it involves real people in real locations and a whole lot of really grueling action. And yet here we have this 74-year-old filmmaker who has just handled it all with just virtuoso skill and ability. Anyway, here is what Green Border is about. Green Border turns out to be an area in between Poland and Belarus. And the movie starts with a family on an airplane, and they are on their way to get out. Well, they have left Syria, and they are on their way to stay forever, ever out of troubled, war-torn, terribly tormented Syria. They are on their way out of there, and their goal is to get to a relative in Sweden. They are going to land in Belarus, and the idea is to get out of Belarus right away over into Poland, which is part of the European Union, and then from there they will make their way to Sweden. That's the plan. So what they find out when they get into Belarus, and they do successfully cross over into Poland, the border is just a bunch of barbed wire sort of rolled up and set up in the middle of a forest. The movie is called Green Border. They manage to make it. However, they immediately run into horrible difficulties with the border guards. And it turns out that the people in Poland, all they want to do is to find these refugees who are trying to cross into the European Union and toss them back over the barbed wire, back into Belarus. And that they find themselves like human ping pong balls. It's not a very dignified metaphor to use, but that is basically what they find themselves being. They are tossed back and forth over this barbed wire border all the time, just hoping that they can get far enough into the EU so that they can finally make their way away from that horrible border. But that turns out to be an incredibly difficult task. Then we meet other characters, and the movie actually gets away from that family for a while because we meet various other people. We spend some time with some of the border guards, and we find out that they are being told, and this is so similar to what goes on in parts of America today, they are told that these refugees are just subversives. They are evil. They are human bullets being sent by our enemies to destroy us from within. So we've just got to get rid of them, get them out of here, get them away from here. And we meet a young border guard who has a pregnant wife, and who is himself a very nice young man, who feels terrible about the brutality which he is being required to dish out to these poor refugees who are just trying to get away from the horrors that they originally faced. Then eventually another character comes along, a psychotherapist, a Polish psychotherapist, and she gets involved with some of the refugees, and she gets traumatized by something that she witnesses, and so then she joins a group of young activists who go into the middle of the forest, into that border area, to try to help to the extent that they can. Now, some of the help that they give to refugees involves not giving help when it means that they might be caught and arrested and taken permanently out of action, in which case they couldn't give any help at all. So I know this sounds complicated. This is the sort of thing that these people are facing. And these are the sorts of things that this movie is about. It's about things that are, oh, so real in our present world when there are so many refugees in so many different places. And it's about the agonies that they face. And it's about the agonies faced by the people who are trying to help them. And most effectively, I think, the movie deals with the real uncertainties that there are. There's one marvelous scene when one of the refugees from Syria, actually, this is a refugee from Afghanistan, is desperate for a little bit of food and water, and she finds a farmer out in the middle of a field, and she asks him for help, and he gives her a little bit of help. He gives her a little bit of food. He gives her a little bit of water, and then he shows her a farmhouse in the distance where she might be able to get more help. But as she's walking to that farmhouse, she glances back for a second, and she sees the farmer now on his cell phone. And so she has no idea. Is he now going to be turning her into some authorities? She has no idea. We have no idea. The uncertainty of it is the horrifying thing. And the movie is full of things like that. I will also mention this movie has more cell phones in it than I've seen in a long time. And some of them work, and some of them have power, and some of them are broken, and some of them are smashed. And they are so important to so many people in so many different ways. Anyway, Green Border by Agnieszka Holland. On one level, it's just an action movie and a thriller. On another level, it is a profoundly important political movie. I couldn't recommend it more highly. I'm going to say it again. Green Border, directed by the wonderful Agnieszka Holland. It's a movie to see if you possibly can. It's a terrific piece of work. And that is my somewhat comical, much more serious story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films Tuesday, I Used to Be Funny, and Green Border.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.